HPPodCraft.com.
HPPodCraft.com, Strange Studies of Strange Stories, offers you a glimpse into the past. Thrill to the comments of yestermonth. I am your co-host, Chad Pfeiffer.
And I am Chris Lackey. We are here to talk about your thoughts of the past in the present. Observations on our September shows.
It started as shade temper, it ended as snail temper, as oh, these things right. often do. Let's get right into these comments with Fat Face featuring comedian and deranged millionaire Patton Oswalt.
Ratchbox writes, amazing. I've been binging the podcast since I joined 5 months ago, and I finally caught up Tuesday. Oh my God. That's a lot to listen to, man. That, over 500
over five
episodes.
5 months? Maybe not. Maybe not.
Oh God. That's like almost 300 hours of us talking about stuff. That's crazy.
Sounds great. It sounds like everybody should do that.
So Ratchbox says, I've been seriously jonesing for my HP Podcraft fix since. Now, we have a brand new episode in Patton Oswalt 2. Plus, I've already read this story, so I'm ready to go. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. I know that feeling because I just binged 2 seasons of Succession on HBO without knowing that the new season premiere was about to happen. And it did. Mm. So I got done and I was like, oh, that's sad. And then there was a new one coming out. It was Lazy Christmas.
Aw, that's great.
Ketus writes, finally, another Michael Shea episode with Patton. Love these episodes after barreling through Demiurge and Color Out of Time. Hope you guys can cover Color Out of Time soon. Multiple episodes with Patton would rock. Mm. Seriously awesome story that sent my mind reeling with possibilities for the Call of Cthulhu tabletop role-playing game.
Mm. Dr. Matak writes, the Shea stories are some of my favorite because he has a really unique perspective on the weird fiction genre and I suppose writing in general. I'm no Shea scholar, but I feel there have to be intentional parallels between the status of his characters in society and their ability or proclivity to experience otherworldly phenomena. Addicts and sex workers are so often looked down on and seen as living in the borderlands between human and wastrel, just as the characters in weird fiction find themselves on the border of normal perception and beyond. I always find it refreshing that Shea humanizes these people and makes heroes out of the marginalized.
Agreed. And it comes from experience rather than guesses, condescending guesses as to what these folks are up to.
She, her, Shoggoth Lord writes, finally, my namesake has appeared. Though I'm ashamed to admit it, but I first encountered Shoggoth Lords while skimming the COC tabletop role-playing game material, not by reading this tale. Much as Chris has mentioned, I've never played Call of Cthulhu.
Well, that's all right. You know, that book, those source books, I'm not a big reader of source books. I think you'll get stuff and just read it, right?
I do. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, like I've never really done that, but Call of Cthulhu, I'll pull that one out every once in a while because the illustrations are amazing. There's just a lot of interesting information in it.
Frederick Bridle writes, did you see that there was an announcement about Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities Netflix anthology? It's covering stories of both H.P. Lovecraft and Michael Shea, and also Henry Kuttner. You covered The Graveyard Rats and The Invaders. As always with Del Toro, I kept my enthusiasm at cautiously optimistic until I see it, but this could be fun. I did not know about this. You gave me news, Frederick, because I hadn't heard about it, and I went online and saw, oh my God, they're doing all this cool new stuff. That's amazing.
I was only vaguely aware of it myself until you told me, so... Telephone game. George Orr Binks writes, Kelly Girls, this is about our episode with Patton, Kelly Girls were secretaries from the temp agency. I think Patton was referring to the Harvey Girls.
Mm.
There was a movie with Judy Garland about them. Oh. And yeah, that was really weird because I actually watched That's Entertainment a few days after we recorded, which is a mixtape of, you know, with the big Paramount musicals. And they talked about that Judy Garland movie. It sounded odd to me when he said it because I think I worked for Kelly Temp Agency when I was like... you know, sorting seed catalogs in a bindery in Iowa. I think Kelly was my employer. So when he said that, I thought, what? Harvey Girls, those were the ones that went out and sort of settled the West in terms of trying to bring a little niceness to these more uncivilized places.
There you go.
It was the spirit of what he was saying that was important.
Exactly, yeah. Author Meow writes, great episode as always, but I'm looking forward to Patton's next installment of Needle in a Shea Stack. My best friend and I are avid quilters, and the geometry of my latest quilt just isn't adding up. I'm hoping for some insight. Oh, God, I love it when he does the riffs, the Shea riffs.
Oh, I do too.
Also, best friend made me a Shoggoth quilt once. No joke. It looks like a puddle of eyes and teeth. She kept complaining that it was eating her needle, and I'm starting to think that maybe she wasn't speaking figuratively.
Oh, dear. That's cool. Drix writes, great episode, guys. These Patton episodes are especially fun to me because he's literally the reason I found the podcast. Back in high school, I had followed him on Twitter, and one day he tweeted about the show and linked to it. Already loving Lovecraft, I decided to give the show a whirl. I think the first episode I listened to was Notebook Found in a Deserted House, and I was instantly hooked. Went through all the original Lovecraft run and beyond, and now years later, here I still am while finishing up college. Looking forward to more studies of strange stories and hopefully more Patton to boot.
You know, it's funny that you bring up listening to the older episodes, because since we've been doing this, redoing the website, I listened to some of our older episodes, and our voices are higher pitched. Like, we sound different. We've aged, and I can tell in the timbre of our voice, which is very bizarre. We've been doing it that long.
Yeah, I know. I notice that all the time, too. Shuggothlord writes, wait, hold on. Does Copying Squid have an abridged version of this tale? I read it in Demiurge, and you gents completely skipped her unnerving run-in with one of Fatface's patients while rambling through the city, or the appearance of a copy of At the Mountains of Madness. Which she reads in the story, so I just wanted to note, no, these things were in the story. We synopsized them, but they didn't make the final episode cut.
Yeah.
And Patton is actually great in that respect because he tuned out during all of that. And when he tunes out, I know the audience probably will too. So I need to cut those things.
And that gets us into The Devil's Crypt Part 1. Jim Cannon writes, it sounds like you guys are missing Carnacki. Whatever faults William Hope Hodgson might have, he could at least write an occult detective who did some detecting. I wasn't sure where you guys would make the break, obvious as it is in retrospect, and read ahead to finish the whole story. I definitely see why Andrew would describe it as a Smith/Howard mashup. It's just one dude grabbing a broadsword away from tipping over into one direction.
Rob Gilly writes, so I just listened to this last night and I laughed so hard I listened to it twice. I think Chad should be the sidekick of every psychic detective. I don't want to be. I'm pretty sure my favorite line of this episode was all in the tool belt of a typical Spaniard. Well, that was one of those things I actually don't know if we said, but for some reason out of nowhere it was like racist towards Spaniards. And so I made that joke. That wasn't my opinion. There was something that actually was a quote from the story.
Yeah.
Today, or you know, he said something like that. The comment goes on, today I was curious, and so I went looking for digital versions of E. Hoffman Price stories, and I found that you can get one of those mega pack Kindle books containing all the Pierre d'Artois stories, including The Devil's Crypt, for a whole 48 cents. Naturally, I bought it. I've read the first two stories, and so far there's been an awesome sword fight, an attempted human sacrifice, a lot of driving around in that Isolde roadster, a beautiful young woman in need of rescue, cigar smoking, and constant references to Malik Taus, the peacock angel of the Yazidi religion, whom we may recall from the horror that is The Horror at Red Hook.
Oh, wow.
These stories are extremely fun, annoying, aristocratic French psychic detective and all. Best 48 cents I've spent in a long time. So thanks, Chad and Chris, for sparking my curiosity.
Wow.
I think you have a choice between those mega packs and a piece of Bazooka Joe gum for 48 cents. I hope it was the best money you spent.
I just picked up one of those mega packs to read for fun. You know, not for the show, just because I wanted to read.
Wow.
It's the Black Magic Mega Pack, and I got it because it popped up on my thing. You know how these do. And it has this cool kind of like devil dude doing some stuff. And I'm like, oh, you know, I want to read a story about some devil dude. That looks great. And I saw it was a Manly Wade Wellman story, and I think there's two in there. So I went straight for that. It's called The Terrible Parchment, and it has lots of direct Lovecraft references in there. It's really short. It's a really short story. It's not even worth covering on the show, I don't think, because it's so short.
Yeah.
But basically, somebody, Manly, gets a copy of Weird Tales, and in it is a parchment from the Necronomicon that is alive. It like moves around the room and it's creeping around and doing stuff. And eventually they have to get a priest over to use some holy water to stop it. And that's pretty much the whole story.
Wow.
But I loved it. It's fun. It's just a ridiculous, stupid story, but it was really enjoyable. So those mega packs are a steal. It's just unbelievable how much great stuff you get for them.
I have a bunch of them on my Kindle for, I need something to read. Well, here's 3,000 stories to choose from, so something's got to be good. Yeah. You reminded me of, I saw this Three Stooges film on the weekend where there was a guy in a devil costume, but the short was called, I'm sure it's on YouTube and I'll link out to it, was called Three Pests in a Mess from 1945. But the reason I was, they shot a mannequin in the film and thought they had killed somebody.
Oh my God.
And they immediately went to disposing of the body. The Three Stooges had no remorse and they never found out they didn't kill somebody. So they were totally fine with accidentally murdering somebody and burying them. And then when they went to bury him, they buried him in a pet cemetery for some reason. And it was Halloween. So the guys that were trying to figure out what they were up to were dressed for Halloween like the devil.
Oh.
And one guy had this really creepy skeleton outfit on. It was fantastic. I highly recommend it. Yeah, had a pet cemetery and all. Ethan Cordry writes, amazing. That monster wrestling scene made me think of the greatest tradition of supernatural detective media, luchador movies. In films like Santo versus the Vampire Women or Blue Demon versus the Satanic Power, it's proven over and over again that only wrestlers have the skills it takes to vanquish the powers of evil.
It's true. Barrett
was on the right track. He just needed some Mexican moves instead of those Japanese ones. Episode 564, The Devil's Crypt Part 2. Rob Gilly writes, Lloyd's Bank. Horses, people, and a beach. That's a reference to Craig's phony ad, which he writes, that made me feel a lot better after hearing Price's opinions about the sociologically inspired silliness of the civil rights movement. So thanks for that, Link. Why is Greg Johnson's name not on everyone's lips?
Good question.
Very good question. Also, that was some super analysis at the end there about the way stories work and why sometimes we don't care about stories and just want to see guys in monster suits punch each other. I mean, it's cool when monsters represent fears that we all share, like sexuality or conformity or the difficulty of finding clothes that fit, werewolves. Those kinds of stories can give us lots to think about. But it's also cool when monsters just punch each other because that's what monsters do sometimes.
Super Keaton writes, it's good to have these discussions of racism and attitudes of the time. If we don't intelligently examine creators and their works, then I think we are failing, even as fans, to appropriately explore and understand their creations. I always appreciate this podcast's openness and willingness to wrestle with that particularly ugly serpent when it crops up, especially with good humor.
And Jim Cannon writes, oof, well, there's always speculation about whether H.P. Lovecraft, racist in his own time, would have softened with the xenophobia if he had lived past 1937. We can see now that one of his contemporaries, who by most accounts would have been less racist in the 20s and 30s, became a reactionary old man in the 70s, being pro-vigilante and pro-racist. Heck of a combination, and not the sort of thing that inspires hope that Lovecraft would have grown up a little if he lived through the middle of the 20th century.
Sweatin' of the Great Oldies writes, entertainment is, I think, as valuable as art. If the work whiles away your time, it is successful and worthy of respect. It might make you laugh or cry or stab your fist into the air or spill your popcorn or cheer on the wrestling of demons. It takes on many forms, and entertainment often makes life bearable. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I love me some art. And when art is entertaining, well, that's just incredible. When we find out the artist or entertainer is bad or a cad or a treasurer of retrograde views, well, that sort of calls all that whiling away and art appreciation into question. It can make us feel dirty by extension. Were we somehow unknowingly complicit? Are we complicit going forward? Can we love the art but hate the artist? Can we love the entertainer and despise the thoughts that they entertain? Rough sledding, a lot of it. So sorry to hear of Chance's experiences with his father. That must have been soul-tearing. All the more props due then for turning out such a decent fellow.
Oh, wait till they uncover that letter I wrote.
What?
Then you're going to... No, I'm kidding. Thank you for that. Although the point of that story is that I do love my dad. Yeah. You know, and most of relating that was also to say, I understand it's uncomfortable when this kind of stuff comes up, but I've never experienced life without it being an issue, partly because of that upbringing, partly by just being American, partly like just studying American literature of any kind. So it doesn't seem all that out of line to me to talk about it.
Well, Gabriel Thompson doesn't like us talking about it. They say, I apologize, but I can't listen to you guys anymore. I've listened for years, but I've grown tired of hearing tangents about racism and sexism. And then Wayne Durick responds to that comment by saying, bye, Queen.
Pretty which funny.
I appreciate. Yeah, that's well. Don't listen.
Yeah, you don't have to listen. I was going to say, look, man, you don't need to write anything. Just don't listen. But the truth is that, like, I started watching that new Hugh Jackman movie, and it was so bad in the first 2 minutes, I turned it off and then tweeted about how bad it was. So certainly I've done the same thing, and I'm sorry we're talking about too much for you.
Yeah.
I don't feel like we talk about it that much.
No. Elizabeth Parcells writes, he withstood the beast by pure force of will to slay. Definitely a great line. I had misread it first as I withstood the beats by pure force of will to slay, and I was reminded of the last time I was in a club and didn't want to dance.
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Andrew Blank writes, pulled a few boners and go whole hog or unintentional sexual innuendos made all the funnier coming from the mouth of an aggrieved segregationist. Also, Chris's reactions to this unpleasant knowledge really made me smile for the relatability. His, is this bad news? Question completely sums up my feelings when I feel I'm about to find out something heinous. That was, you know what? That just happened to me. I went down this rabbit hole with Young Frankenstein and Aerosmith the other day.
Oh, no.
Because I heard that Walk This Way was inspired by Young Frankenstein. Literally, it was just something somebody told me. I said, is that true? So I read, it is. The guitarist had come up with the riff. They went to go see that movie, and they were really entertained by the Walk This Way. No, This Way, This Way joke. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gave him a chorus, Walk This Way. Of course, they then made it about a woman teaching a young man to stimulate her.
Oh.
Is what that song is about, if you didn't know.
All right.
And I thought, you know, that is so cool. So I start reading more about this song because I'm like, that's cool that it's like female forward as opposed to the other things that were flying around then. Uh-huh. That's cool that, you know, Steven Tyler was a percussionist, so it's got that rat-a-tat sort of style to the vocals that transitioned so well to Run DMC doing it, which brought hip-hop to a wide audience and all these great things. And then it was like, and while Steven Tyler was writing this, he was in his mid-20s and he was dating a 16-year-old girl who he met when she was 14. God. And he didn't want to get arrested when he brought her around to places where that wasn't legal. So he talked her parents into giving him custody of this young girl. So he actually had custody of this groupie. No. Yeah, right? It just, exactly. No. It's like you can't avoid I don't want to read about this anymore. That's terrible.
No.
I don't even like Aerosmith for that much. And it was like just when I was having an appreciation.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So, you know, I get it all. I get it.
Rafe Ball writes, is the whole purpose just to bring about the second demon, or is that then going to do something? What's the big goal of this? And it says, he wrote down, Don Jose's master plan. Phase one, create demons. Phase two, ? Phase three, profit.
That old, very perfect South Park joke, because so many things that run that way.
Comments 41, the long cat goodnight. Michelle Albert writes, OMG, I was in an Atomic Highway game, which also uses kit-bashed Hot Wheels cars as minis. Mine is FUD Truck. I use a flamethrower for both cooking and defense. Oh, yes, the Nutcracker book, please.
Yeah, I think we're going to do that, right, for December?
Yeah, for sure.
Heather Savino writes, I second that. I would love to hear you guys cover the Nutcracker. Just make sure to cover the original, since the Alexandre Dumas version, the one that got made into the ballet, makes the story lighter and less scary. And obviously, you don't want that here at HP Podcrash.
No.
We absolutely do not. By the way, Alexandre Dumas is mixed race.
Yep.
You think that Lovecraft and those guys didn't like him for that reason? Or was he, like, okay because he was French?
I bet they didn't even know.
Yeah, because he's a son of a slave.
I didn't realize that. She, her, Shoggoth Lord writes, the cat stole a can of lacquer? This is from you talking about your neighbor's cat coming in and stealing your can. Yeah. Also, I was confused by that as well.
I'm sure.
This recontextualizes Boada being able to steal that can of insecticide in Porth Farm.
Can, to clarify, yeah, we were a little amazed about the talents of that cat in that book. But this can was in a plastic bag that had a tie on the top of it, so it allowed for a good kitty purchase on the object. It could bite the top of the bag and carry it away, but it was still a pretty heavy haul for a little cat.
Yeah.
I was amazed, too. I looked it up. Cats can lift 300 times their body weight.
That's—
did you know that?
Not true. I don't know where you looked that up, but that is definitely not true.
It's out there. I'm just saying, it's out there.
Tom Krall writes, I just want to say that I actually loved the filler episodes. I often find my mind drifting away when listening to your regular episodes when you discuss a story, and I usually come back when you get on a tangent and just talk about some other stuff. So I really loved hearing you guys talk about random stuff, and I would, in fact, encourage you to maybe throw in an episode where you talk about whatever weird fiction or not.
Well, that's good to hear. Episode 565, The Snail Watcher. D. Marmalade writes, classic story. Boy meets snail. Boy falls in love with snail. Boy is crushed beneath the weight of 1,000 snails. Do you think there's a criticism of the scientist lurking around here? The protagonist loves snails as an object of study, but his focus remains on himself, how it makes him the special holder of this knowledge, etc. In the end, it turns out that the snails don't care if he is watching them or not, and that they will carry on indifferent to him after he is dead. Studying and knowledge lead to ruin. Humans in an indifferent universe, starting to sound a bit Lovecraftian, too.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. I think that was what's so attractive about that story.
Good insight. Carlandos writes, wipes forehead with towel. I didn't expect I would need to close the door and look over my shoulder while listening, but that comes with the joy of listening to you guys.
What is that? Scandalized.
Scandalized. Devin Morse writes, the brilliant documentary Microcosmos features a close-up sequence of snails mating over which plays an aria called Les Amours des Escargots, composed by composer Bruno Coulet. I actually saw Microcosmos in the theater in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Was it you and Christian? We went and saw that.
Yep, that's right. I had that same memory because that was a movie I fell asleep at. It is a very pretty movie.
Yeah.
I don't know what we'd been up to the night before, but we got into the theater and it was like, oh, this is very soothing. And then I came to when it was ending and you guys were talking all about it. And I go, I was like, guys, I was asleep and you didn't know.
We were
How did I get away with that?
I don't, because we were just super
into it too. It was just so soothing.
Yeah. Jamie Britton writes, the most merciful thing in the world, I think, is the inability of the human mind to correlate all the snail sex going on. Yeah, there's a lot of snail sex going on in the world. 10 years of unspeakable Lovecraftian horror, and nothing on this podcast has ever come close to how unnerved and cosmically alone Chris's descriptions of gastropod love darts made me feel.
I wonder if he was unnerved first. That's really gross. It's weird the way they do that. Ugh. And then, but nobody really does that for me, do they? I haven't had a love dart, you know, cosmically alone. Maybe I'll never have a love dart planted in me. All right. Well, Jamie wrote on Twitter just this the other day. Chris Christopherson implies the existence of Cross Differson. And Jamie, that is the funniest thing I've read in the last 10 years. I retweeted it. I just couldn't believe how funny that was. I don't even know why it's funny. It filled me with so much joy.
It's funny.
Good job, buddy. John Hancock writes, is it hot in here or is Chris narrating gastropod porn again?
You know what you're getting when you sign up for this show.
Ed Sizemore writes, my first thought on hearing the story is it's about the destructive nature obsession has. I think all of us nerds how easy it is to be consumed, pun intended, by our interests and hobbies. We've all either been the guy or know the guy who so got caught up in D&D that he saw life as one big D&D game. The guy who would trip and say, failed my dexterity check. My second thought was maybe it's a cautionary tale about human overpopulation. We are like the snails and just keep breeding because there is space and resources available. Eventually, like the snails, we are going to overwhelm our environment and kill our caretaker, the Earth. Just a thought. P.S. Lovecraft's horror has nothing on snail sex. That might be the most disturbing description I've ever heard. Spider sex was no thrill ride either.
Steve writes, I was hoping the snails would all inject him with the love darts so his death would be ecstatic. But that's probably more about At Home with the Snails. Okay, yeah.
Imagine. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I had to look it up. At Home with the Snails is a surrealist BBC Radio 4 comedy written by Jared Foster about a dysfunctional British family. This is from Wikipedia. The story features Alex's obsession with snails, killing them, collecting them, and having sexual desires for them, and by season two, even attempting to turn into one. In the second season, his mother and father, George and Beverly, decide to fake their own deaths and spy on their son in order to write a book about his descent into madness.
What? How did that get made?
Dude, the BBC, like, English people make crazy stuff. They're willing to take chances.
I know, I love it. I'm so happy about it. Well, it's because there's some government funding, right?
Oh, it is. It's purely government funding.
Yeah.
That's the BBC.
Well, that's why.
Yeah. Josh Bell writes, I was on my lunch break eating beans on toast when Chris announces he's about to get in the weeds with snail banging. That's fine, I thought. I have a strong stomach. Mistake. And Brett Kramer writes, Isabel Rossellini did a whole series on animal sex. Here's snails. And Brett put a link to the snail one. It's good. It's very quirky and neat. It's very short. It's like a minute long, but not quite accurate. There's some scientific inaccuracies in that. Just want to point out.
Well, I heard for that one, they just let Isabella Rossellini make it up. So you're not getting information that's real there. That's just stuff she thinks.
Yeah, she's rad.
Makes it pretty entertaining. Michael Cunliffe writes, what a great way to round off Slime Timber. Thanks, guys. There's something about this story that made me think of the importance of tending to creative passions responsibly. If you get distracted from what you love by the money it can bring you, it will end badly. Well, that's true. Also, if you're not tending to your stuff, you know, all of us kind of think in some respect, I can't wait till I build up enough credit that I can phone it in and coast. A lot of people do that. Everybody wants to do that, but unfortunately, you have to keep caring about your work.
You do.
It's a bummer.
You really do. Sanjay Matthew writes, well, clearly the message is that capitalism is a shell game. Whoa. And the Toddling Chaos writes, I was thinking Love Dart was going to be my band name, but then you said Sex Duel. There you go.
Yeah. One's a single and one's the band name. Take your pick. And then on the Colossus chapter 6 and 7, which were the penultimate installment. The last one, as I said, is coming out. Jason Denon writes, "That was amazing. I loved the names for the pupils, especially Phil. The action was great once the titular Colossus made its appearance. I was a little disappointed that the Tarrasque didn't get more action, being little more than a footnote, but I suppose something had to get cut. This needs to be a miniseries. Somebody get Sci-Fi on the phone, stat." Well, the Tarrasque isn't even in the story. I just did that because I like it. So it really was a footnote. I'm doing sound effects on this last bit right now, which may already be out by the airing of this. The full thing is also coming out and maybe out by the airing of this. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But somebody told me, and I couldn't find it, that Universal wanted a script for the Colossus of Illaurin back in the day.
Oh, wow.
That this was something Clark Ashton Smith was approached about, but it didn't happen.
Oh, wow.
So I say, let's jump past the Sci-Fi channel. I want Universal.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Because I got ideas for those properties.
Ben A. writes, "Chad, this script is knocking the Colossus out of the park and in many ways improves on Clark Ashton Smith's tale." Agreed. "Many werewolves died to bring us this excellent performance. I'm looking forward to the final chapter. Any chance you would release the soundtrack? The instrumental for Hellions a few episodes ago is a fun listen among other tracks."
Yeah, maybe. Let's see if people even listen to it. Like I say, it's not out yet as a full thing. I mean, so far it's just been our bonus patrons who are legally responsible for it. They have to listen to it. So we'll see when it hits the general public if people even care. I would like to see an animated or real version of it, but we're talking millions and millions of dollars, so I don't even want to get involved with the industry side of it. Just forget about it. This is enough. You know, I love doing this show and the audience we have here. It's enough.
Yeah, it's great.
It would be sugar if we could get the Colossus made, but you know, who needs it when we've got cool people to chat to?
Absolutely.
And who chat back at us. Thanks again for everybody for writing in, and we're going to be back at you soon. That's all we've got for now. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackin. You've been listening to Strange Studies, the Strange Stories comments
here on hppodcraft.com and Patreon.
hppodcraft.com.